Hello. Is my mic on? Okay.
Is the mic on?
Hi. Okay, there we go. Thank you. It's great to see you all. It's great to be here, really. Paul was one of my favorite teachers in seminary, seriously. And I don't have to say that because I'm already ordained. I say it because it's true. I learned so much in the class and from you personally and was really inspired by you as a human being. So, thank you for having me be here. My husband Rob and I were in the conservative evangelical church for 20 years. I'm a little bit embarrassed about that now, considering where I see it having gone. But when we began, there was a lot of love for us in there. And we raised our kids there, we were leaders, we led small groups, and Rob was a worship leader. I counseled women and teenagers. And we had a really good time there. We did everything there was to do. And then our daughter called me from college. She went to Biola, which is not too far from here. And she said, "Mom, I'm struggling with same-sex attraction." That was the language we had at the time. She said, "I've denied it. I've tried to make it go away. I've prayed about it. But I think I'm bisexual." And I thought in that moment, oh my gosh, what will become of her? Will she have a career? Will she be bullied? What can I do to protect her? Will she ever fall in love and love somebody the way Rob and I love each other? And we'll never be the same in the church again. That thought was present right in that moment. So here she is sharing the deepest part of her being. And I know it's going to be a problem in our church family, our church community will not accept us. That was really shocking to me to realize. And when we have church community, we want to think it's safe for our deepest hearts, our deepest needs. And to realize that it wasn't was really sad to me. I knew, for example, I couldn't go into Bible study and talk about my bisexual daughter and get the same encouragement and love that the woman who shared about her son who got another DUI would get. It's true. I tried it. I ended up meeting with several of my closest women friends, and their answer was, "It's a sin and you can't accept it." That was the answer to my daughter, and I was devastated by that. What do you mean I can't accept it? I'm not rejecting my daughter. Are you asking me to do that for rules? I mean, I don't trade stocks or anything, but I know that's a bad trade. So, and people who give you an answer like that have never really had to wrestle with this. That's almost certain. They've never had to pour their hearts out to God and say, "God, make this not so, as Annie and I have, as Annie and I did and came up empty." And we prayed that because we thought that's what God wanted. That was a teaching we had internalized. So when people give you a pat answer they pulled right off the shelf, that's not God, and that's not Jesus. Look at his interactions. There were no pat answers. He always shocked them with his answers. And so we realized that these people who could not accept us were playing, we were putting in our life savings, and they're playing with Monopoly money. That's really what it came down to. So how did so much of the church become so much about rules instead of relationship? And what do we do at this point as our family? Do we continue in a church that does not embrace our daughter and that knows if we accept her, they don't embrace us either? This church whose marquee says all are welcome, whose Savior says all are welcome? What do we do with this? They were essentially asking us to deny the voice of love and compassion within that was Jesus' voice. They were asking us to deny, either outright or by erasure, our own daughter. So, here we were plunked down on this journey and no answers yet. And the answers we got from the church went from anemic to deadly. So I set out wholeheartedly, deliberately, and prayerfully to find answers. And Rob was right by my side. And he said, you find out whatever you need to. We're together on this. I said, that is my man. That's the man I married. So I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how God would reconcile the Bible passages that I thought were at odds. Turns out they're speaking of very different things. They're speaking of men in power abusing people not in power. Okay, well, I'm against that, for the record. It's speaking about temple idol worship, sex with idols, sex in the temple for religious purposes. I'm against that too, in case you're keeping record. Abusive relationships, non-consensual sex. I didn't know all that when I looked at the verses. And that was a startling discovery. I didn't know how God would open the doors or lead or anything as I continued through this, but I knew God was meeting me there, and I knew that God had called me. And, you know, if there's one thing I knew as an evangelical, is I knew when God was speaking to me, and I was hearing God's voice. So this whole journey turned out to be the best thing that ever could have happened to our family. It really was. God led us. God encouraged us. And when I found out there were no resources to help me, I wrote them. So I've got my books out there, and we founded Freed Hearts, my husband and I, and it's become our life's journey to become a full-time advocate and ally. And we have YouTube videos that people can watch, and we have courses online, and all of these things, because it was needed in the culture, because parents were dying on the vine from getting the same kind of feedback we had gotten. So this has become our lifetime work, both of Rob and me, but it has been a journey, because so much of the church has painted itself into a corner by focusing on rules instead of relationship. And I think that the Methodist Church has always been focused on relationship until this issue. This has been a line in the sand, hasn't it? A watershed. All right, so I continued on the path that was in front of me, not knowing what it was, but it became clear, and I want to tell you how. I grew up with no church at all, with an intellectual, agnostic, cynical father. My mom had died, so it was just my dad. And his parents came from the old country through Ellis Island, and my favorite memories growing up were going to visit my grandparents in upstate New York. They were amazing, beautiful people. They were kind, tender-hearted, and good neighbors. And our family heritage was Waldensian, which is one of the earliest Protestant faiths to break away from the Catholic Church. The Waldensians and all the reformers were broke away because of the abuses and excesses of the Catholic Church, which Catholic, of course, is universal. So that was the only game in town. And so they had to break away or else submit to it. And the Catholic Church owned and ran everything, and they threatened people with hell and torture if they didn't comply. The Waldensians, by contrast, lived simply in strong community as good neighbors, and we, just as we see in Acts in the early church. This, to me, was the picture of Christianity, of Christ following, to love your neighbor as yourself. I know, we've heard that somewhere, haven't we? So I grew up with a tender love for my neighbor and a healthy skepticism of power-based church that punishes the non-compliant. Whatever our response to our daughter or the LGBT community as a whole, I knew it had to be based on love, period. But the conditioning was deep, and I had to let it deconstruct. One video that I watched as I was pursuing all this said, love is the primary thing, and if a rule contradicts that, you've got to set it aside, because love is what matters. And I was like, that sounds really good, but can that be right? Don't those rules mean something? That was my evangelical conditioning coming through. And even all the while, as I kept loving people and encouraging people, I kept saying to myself, God, don't let me lead anybody astray. Why is that such a big thing? And I know that's a conditioned response for so many who have been down the path that I've been, is like as if that's the gospel. Don't let me lead anybody astray. But it's a huge conditioned fear in so many Christians. What we really said is, God, let me love people well. That's a thing we're called to do. As I deconstructed those verses, and there are just a few, I realized that they mean something very different than we've been taught, as I said. There's been an agenda to privilege anti-gay interpretations of a few little verses. That was a choice made way later along the way, and that's a problem. For instance, that Leviticus 18 verse that says, man shall not lie with another man. Do you know that the original says, man shall not lie with a boy? Well, that's a different meaning to that verse. And that whole section in Leviticus is about the man of the household, the ruler of the household with all the power, and who he can't sleep with. Did you know that? He can't sleep with his mother-in-law, his sister-in-law, his daughter-in-law, the children in the household, and the slave boys. It's all directed at him not abusing his power and having sex with people who can't say no, which is non-consensual sex. Well, that puts a whole different light on Leviticus 18. But if you pull it out and turn it into something else, well, yeah, you win. I mean, you know, it was really a shock to me. And also, the word homosexual, I didn't know, wasn't even invented until the 1800s. And it was added to the Bible in 1946. Did you know all of this? You may. This was a shock to me. And it made me wonder, who's got the agenda here? And the Methodist Book of Discipline, which acknowledges that all persons are of sacred worth, was added to in the 70s with a clause that said the practice of homosexuality is incompatible with Christian teaching. So now you can't be ordained or married. Where did that come from? It came from the tenor in the 70s and the Jerry Falwell and the moral majority and all of that that was going on. Who's got the agenda here? And of course, the UMC denomination is in a real pickle right now, isn't it? Not only because of this invented exclusion in 1972, but because the leadership chose rules over relationship. It chose their rules over people. It's leadership that's gone behind the scenes and manipulated the votes in other countries so that they could get this worldwide exclusion. The vast majority of Methodists on the ground do not want those exclusions. They are in agreement with supporting LGBTQ people. The UMC leadership is the Catholic Church in the 1300s, and the congregations are the Waldensians, the Reformers. The Methodist congregations want to love each other and be a good neighbor, and the leadership wants to enforce its hierarchy of rules. And that's, of course, true in other denominations too. And the only people Jesus got mad at, like brood of vipers level mad, were those who enforced the hierarchy of rules. We know in our bones what's right, don't we? It took a few years for me to work all this out, and seminary was a huge help for me. But meanwhile, I had started a blog. And the first one was, it was called God, Some Gays, and the Bible. And I knew I was opening myself up from attack from my Christian friends. And I got it. But I also got messages from people who were saying, I come out to my mother and now she won't stop crying. Or my son is gay and I'm terrified for him. Or, you know, how can I tell my parents that I'm gay? And all of these, and Or I've been kicked out of the house. And I answered those emails with love and compassion. That's all I did. And all the while, I kept saying, God, don't let me lead anybody astray, because of that conditioned response. But every time I did, God would send somebody else, and I could just see the wink in God's eye saying, here's another person to love well, and that's all I did. Without answers, without anything except love, which, you know, was all I knew to do, but it turns out it was enough. So the more I pressed into this, the more that silliness of don't let me lead anybody astray, it just fell away of its own weight. And the more emerged the prayer, God, let me love well. And since then, the reality of loving our neighbor has really emerged in you know, lived out ways. This ongoing work that we've started has reached millions of people and grew into community online for parents and community online for LGBT people, and thousands of LGBTQ people that have come to peace now with who they are because of this work. I go around and I speak, and I built resources to help people, and it has been a huge honor to bring peace and healing to people who have been led astray by hierarchies of power. And it all comes from loving well, from actually doing the thing that Jesus told us to do. But a lot of people are in pain. Still a lot of people are in pain. 40% of homeless youth are LGBTQ, which is four times the general population. And 25% of those homeless youth became homeless the day they came out to their parents. How do you make a decision like that? Like that? It's because you're preconditioned. And 57% of transgender youth attempt suicide. 57%. But if they had just one parental support, that goes down to 4%. Huge, huge impact of parental support. We get daily emails from kids trapped in their family where they can't come out or they can't be who they are. Like, you know, kids whose father find out and beat them and take away their computer and their cell phone and cut off contact with the outside world. One young man just wrote and said, my parents are going to send me to conversion therapy. How can I make it through? How do you answer an email like that? Now, in California has rightly banned conversion therapy. That's a great thing. But I also want to tell you that this stuff is still going on under the conversion therapy is going on under the protective umbrella of religious liberties. They call them, you know, troubled youth camps or troubled youth ministries. And all of this stuff is being haggled out in upper rooms, in meeting rooms by people up in the hierarchy, but it's the kids and adults on the ground who are paying the price for it, who are living out the consequences. One of the most powerful things I learned in seminary was that the Bible was written from pain and suffering by an oppressed people. I didn't realize that before. It as a cry of lament, as a heart's cry for freedom. But it's been interpreted through the ages from the top down. Of course they're going to get it wrong. And this I know, my interpretation of the Bible that doesn't, any interpretation of the Bible that doesn't come from the underbelly of the hurting, oppressed people is a wrong interpretation. It's the wrong interpretation like that is what Jesus blasted to the religious leaders of his day. So it's a serious transgression to misinterpret the Bible like that. That's why Jesus told us, don't put undue burdens on people. Better to be thrown into the sea with a millstone around your neck than to put weights on people that they can't carry. Don't judge, love well. That's what Jesus tells us. So how do we love well? Well, we meet people where they are. We accept them as they are. We laugh with them. We cry with them. And we protect them. And we help them when they need it. That's all. By trying to hold on to the rules, we lose the love. That's how it works. And so many of these churches that are non-affirming are losing the most loving families because they'll leave. And so they're left with the most rules-based families. Huh. Jesus pointed us to relationship, not rules, every single time. As we move forward in these divisive times, it is critical that we support people, not hierarchies, relationships, not rules. Above all else, we need to love lavishly, unconditionally, radically. Love and leave the rest to God. Love and leave whatever issue somebody may be going through, of whatever type, leave that to God, between them and God. God does not triangulate with us, by the way, calling us in to speak to people, to correct them because they won't listen to God. To love radically, lavishly, inclusively is beautifully and profoundly simple. And it's what we've been asked to do. That's what it means to be a follower of Christ today or any day. So thank you so much for your heart to love people well and be in this congregation that seeks to love well. It's really an honor to share my heart with you today. Thank you.